The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I'd like to continue today the discussion or conversation on karma. I began last week, and I'll review the parts of what I talked about last week and then add some new pieces. Because I know this is a drop-in group, so many of you weren't here last week to hear that part, so that's fine. So I'll review a little bit. And also encourage questions so that it is more of a conversation as I'm speaking. I'm happy to take questions. And this conversation, I figure, will just go until I'm done with my notes. Last week I got through about a page and a half, so so we'll just keep going having this conversation. Karma is a kind of a, it can be a kind of a challenging topic. It certainly is a word that we're familiar with from our everyday language. This is a word from Sanskrit that has come into the everyday lexicon. I just heard somebody yesterday, I don't remember where I was, but, it was at Whole Foods. I was getting ready to walk down the store, and somebody says, "Well, that's just karma, the bad kind." And, there's a lot of, I think, misunderstandings about, because there's a kind of a sense of the use of that word in our everyday language, we come to the understanding of karma with some ideas that come with that understanding, that come with that cultural baggage, essentially. And I think in general, people do say, well, it's your, when somebody says something like, well, it's your karma, they're not saying something good, So there tends to be that association of karma with unfortunate stuff. So just to correct that a little bit here, what karma describes, what the Buddhist teaching on karma describes, because the word karma was in use at the time of the Buddha. It's not a word he invented. It basically means action. And there were a lot of understandings at the time of the Buddha about how action worked. There were some people that believed that action was completely predetermined, that whatever we're doing is completely foreordained by what's happened in the past. There were people who believed there was no such regularity and that everything was completely chaotic. And the Buddha actually took a middle stance in a way. He did say that there is conditions from the past that contribute to how we act. But it's not like a foreordained thing. So this is a big difference in terms of the understanding of karma that the Buddha offered. There were people of his day that said, well, if you do this, then this is going to be the result. If you kill somebody, you will go to hell. It's that kind of cause and effect relationship that some people believed in at his day and some people believe in this day. It's kind of like, if you do this, that's the consequence. The Buddha's exploration was a little more nuanced, and this is a piece that I really want to talk about today. And that was, yes, the conditions from our past influence how we step forward, and how we are in this moment is actually almost a bigger determining factor for how we step forward. So it's not simply past determining future. It's what's happened in the past plus how we're relating to it in this moment that takes us into the future. And that piece of how we are in the present moment adds a huge variety in the Buddhist understanding of the consequences of our actions. So the teaching on karma, as the Buddha explored it and explained it, he described it as being a natural law. It wasn't something he felt like he invented, but it was rather something he felt like he discovered, much as Newton discovered the law of gravity and explained how bodies fall and act in relationship to each other because of their pull on each other. Buddha described the law of human experience, kind of a natural law of human experience. And that natural law, one of the things he said about that natural law is it's really complicated. And you can describe it kind of simply, which he does describe kind of simply as when, the kind of the basic statement of what karma, the law of karma is that our actions, our intentional actions, produce results that are resonant with the action, in a way. So the way Bhikkhu Bodhi put this, and I read this last time, the capacity of our intentional actions to produce an ethically appropriate result. And so when we act and the intention associated with that action is one of greed or aversion or confusion of delusion, that tends to head us in the direction of struggle, of suffering, of stress, dissatisfaction, unhappiness. When our actions are motivated out of kindness, compassion, wisdom, generosity, essentially when our actions are motivated out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, we tend to head in the direction of happiness, ease, peace. And yet, the Buddha said, so it can be explained kind of simply in that way, but if you look in an individual moment as to what's going on here and now, the Buddha says your response to that, what's happening to you? Some of it is a result of karma. Some of it is a result of your past actions, and some of it is more just circumstances. There are other natural laws operating in the world, like natural laws around weather and natural laws around genetics and heredity and things like that. And the law of karma doesn't say that. Well, it's your karma to be in this snowstorm. That's not, it's more, it's your karma how you are in that snowstorm. If you hate that snowstorm and you're really frustrated and angry because you wanted to go someplace and there's 2 feet of snow outside, I know this doesn't happen here, but it happened to me in Massachusetts. so if you're really angry about that, that's the karma. A habit of reacting to things, and perhaps you've practiced or cultivated reactivity in the way towards anger, that's the karma, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is the karma also that we're human beings in a body that are fragile to snow?
So is the karma also, and I'll repeat it because we're recording, is the karma also that we're in a human body that's fragile and, what was the other
part?
Can't tolerate the cold. There is a way in which it is understood that the birth into a human body is karma. Yeah, that the view of karma, and this is a piece that I'll actually table to next week or the following week. The view of karma as acting over multiple lifetimes, that the fact that we're born in a human body is understood in the traditional teachings to be a propulsion from former lives. So, let's not go there today. Let's get just the basics of karma today. But yes, that is an understanding that is part of karma. So So this intention, the intention that comes in a moment, the word intention, I want to clarify this a little bit. We usually use the word intention to mean, conscious choices in our minds. I had an intention when I got up this morning to come here. I know I'm coming here, and this was my intention. It's been my intention for, weeks to come here today. There's that kind of intention, and we often use the word intention to talk about what we're intending to do. That's kind of in our colloquial use of the word intention. The word intention, I'm using the word intention in a more specific way here, and the way Bhikkhu Bodhi used it, the capacity of our intentional actions, is a more specific way of using the term, where it refers to the fact that our actions are motivated by a mental impulse. We act because our mind propels us to act. The first paragraph of the Dhammapada, did I quote this last time? I don't remember. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupted mind and suffering follows as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. All experiences preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a peaceful mind and happiness follows like a never departing shadow. Those first two verses of the Dhammapada are essentially an expression of karma. That when we speak or act out of craving, self-interest, greed, aversion, delusion, it tends to lead us towards suffering. When we speak out of peace, of friendliness, of kindness, it tends to lead us towards happiness. So, fairly simply expressed, and yet the Buddha said, if in a moment you try to figure out, well, what's the karma of being here in this experience right now? Why am I here in this moment right now? He said, you'll go mad trying to figure out all the circumstances that brought you here. It's way too complex for our minds to really grasp all of the causes and conditions that led us to this moment. I mean, just think, just even a small reflection on this gives you a sense of the vastness of the interplaying conditions that brought you here. I mean, if even before you were born, your parents had to, come together on a particular day at a particular time for you to even appear. So that's an amazing piece of karma right there. That's an amazing piece of conditions that came together for you to appear. And then, just reflect on why you're here today. What has happened in the past week that prompted you to show up today? I mean, did you read about it on the internet? How did that happen? Did a friend tell you about it? And what were the circumstances of your friend knowing about it? When you got up, what were the circumstances that led you to get here? So even in just reflecting on a simple thing, we see just how many conditions. I mean, what brought you to the Dharma? I mean, it can go back to that place. When did you first find IMC? And how did that happen? Had you read a book? Had somebody told you about it? And how had they found it? I mean, there's so many causes and conditions that interplay and interweave that we basically can't figure out all of it. But what the Buddha does point to that is possible to see is in this moment, as we take an action to step into the next moment, we can recognize whether that action is motivated from greed, aversion, or delusion, or non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion. So in this moment, this is where karma really gets interesting. Not so much, what did I do in the past that got me here? I mean, that may be interesting, but it's more helpful to look at what's happening now and how am I responding to that now? That's where our a direction or turning can happen towards happiness, is how we are here and now, in this moment, responding to this action to step into the next moment. And so the intention here is about, with respect to what's happening, an action to step into the next moment, every single thing that we do, every single movement of body, every single thing that we say, even what's happening in our minds, has an intention to it. That there is a, you know, kind of a movement towards the action before the action happens. So we can know we're going to move before we move. We can know we're going to speak before we speak. And we can know we're going to think before we think, even. It's kind of amazing that we can see that, but it is possible to know that we're going to think before we think. In seeing that moment, and it's easiest in our bodily actions to begin to see this, that we can see, you know, before we stand up, we can see, oh, I'm going to stand up. We can see that. In seeing that, you're seeing the intention. You're seeing the kind of impulsion or energy towards an action. And that impulsion or intention, that's the kind of technical use of the word intention, is the energetic kind of impulse. It's a mental impulse, energetic mental impulse towards an action. It happens before the action arises. So in that seeing of the intention, which is just a neutral thing, the intention itself, it's just that impulse, there is a motivation. There's a reason why we're impelled to step forward into that moment. It's a kind of a spin on that intention. And that's where the crux of our happiness or our suffering lies, is in that intention to step forward. If that intention is accompanied by greed, aversion, or delusion, it will tend to head us in the direction of suffering. So I'll sometimes use an analogy, I think I'll use it today, around karma. That, think of a soccer ball. You know, there's a ball and it's sitting there. And when you kick the ball, there's the swinging of the leg and the energy that's kind of transmitted to the ball, right? The leg moves and there's an energetic transmission from the movement of your leg to the ball, and then the ball moves. So there's that transmission of energy from one moment to the next. You kick the ball and the ball moves. That swinging of the leg and that swinging of the leg is like the intention. The impact with the ball is like the action. So that's what we're doing. And the direction that the ball goes is like the result of our action. So with karma, we have the intention, the action, and the result. And the result is in line with the quality of the motivation associated with the intention. So, as I said many times this morning, greed, aversion, and delusion tends to lead us to suffering. So with that ball, you know, there's the movement of the leg, which is like the intention, the contact with the ball, which is the action that sets the movement into motion, and then the ball moves in a certain direction. Now, the motivation is kind of like whether we're kicking the ball from the right-hand side or the left-hand side. You know, the direction that we kick the ball from tends to make it go in a certain direction. If we want the ball to go to the left, we kick it from the right, and it goes towards the left. So the motivation is like that spin. What direction are we coming at the ball from? Now, you can see that if you are kicking a soccer ball and you kick it from the right and it goes to the left, that how far it goes to the left will depend on many circumstances. It'll depend on how hard you're kicking the ball. It'll depend on, whether you're kicking it up and it goes into the air or kicking it down and it goes towards the ground. So the way that you bring that energy from the direction matters. How far the ball goes or the kind of the result that happens. And likewise, the strength of our greed, aversion, and delusion also has an impact on the results of our karma. So, a little bit of mild irritation at somebody and having that slip out into your speech, that may be a small kind of repercussion. You know, somebody may then be somewhat irritated back at you, and there's a little bit of result that happens. So there's the karma, and this is one key piece to distinguish. When we talk about karma in the everyday language sense, usually people mean the results of karma. They mean the results. They mean what you've landed in. The Buddhist teaching on karma is that it's that intention and motivation, that stepping into the next moment, that's where karma is created. And then that has a result. So there's the result of karma, which tends to be congruent with the motivation that triggered the action. So the other piece of this, in terms of the complexity of karma, so coming back to the soccer ball analogy, it's not only the direction that we're kicking the ball and how hard we're kicking it and whether we're kicking it down or up in terms of how far it will go. There's kind of the climate of, if there's wind, for instance. If there's wind blowing and the wind is blowing in the direction that you're kicking it, the ball will tend to go further in that direction. Kind of, it's also propelled by the wind. So it's got the force of your leg that's sending the ball into that direction, but also the force of this the climate, the nature of what's already there. So the wind is blowing it in that direction, so that it'll tend to go further in that direction. If the wind is blowing the other direction, depending on how hard the wind is blowing, it may simply slow the ball down, or it may actually guide the ball to go the other way. So, to bring this into our experience again, the Buddha, this is another area where his description of the law of karma differed from other people in his day, that an action in this moment is taken not in a empty field. It's taken in the accumulated field of our choices from the past. So one phrase that he uses, where he says, there's the case when a trifling evil deed done by a certain individual takes him to hell. There is the case where the very same sort of trifling deed done by another individual is experienced here and now and for the most part barely appears for a moment. So this is a kind of the fine-tuning around karma, that it is not, you do this action, you act out of irritation, and here's the result. If you, for instance, to bring this back to that example of acting out of irritation, if with that person you have let that irritation out over and over and over and over and over again, someday they might explode at you. So, you know, it's the same little irritation that's coming out, you know, that little bit, but it's coming out in a field of accumulated irritation, and so the result is a stronger response. Likewise, if we have been very, like, kind and compassionate with this particular person most of the time, and have a little tiny bit of irritation one time, they may be inclined to go, oh, that person must be tired today. You know, so again, how we act is coming in the field of our previous actions. So there's another analogy that the Buddha offers. He says, suppose one were to drop a salt crystal into a small amount of water in a cup. And, you know, this not, I think he's not talking about, like, the little tiny salt crystals we have, but, you know, a salt crystal probably, you know, this big. So if you drop that into a glass, would that water become unfit to drink because it was too salty? Well, there's that possibility. You put a large salt crystal into a small amount of water, and it really impacts that the drinkability of the water. He said, but if you put that salt crystal into a large, clear pool of water, the same amount of salt into a large, clear pool of water, and then take a cup, you're not going to notice that little bit of saltiness. It's not going to make that water unfit to drink. And so likewise, when we have a kind of a climate in our minds of actions that support peace, ease, happiness, then small actions will tend to not land as strongly. And I know that, you know, if it's the other way, if you've been, you know, in a situation where there's a lot of frustration kind of piling up, you know, at least I've seen what happens if I'm in a situation where there's some frustration piling up. If some small, tiny little thing happens, there's even the phrase that people use, right? The straw that broke the camel's back. You know, it's like just the smallest little thing, and suddenly the whole world collapses, and it's horrible. We're, you know, in a situation where we can't figure out how to work with things. So if our climate of our mind is around greed, aversion, delusion, if that's what we've been practicing, then small actions of greed, aversion, and delusion will tend to be magnified. So we are inheriting, essentially, in this moment, we are inheriting the climate of our past actions. And this teaching is, I mean, it's a natural law, but what it's expressing to us is that in this moment, if we can choose to act from ease, from peace, from clarity, from wisdom, it will tend to begin to accumulate that climate in the mind. And that climate then, well, it's kind of like if you originally have, you know, a big bowl of water that's unfit to drink, and you're adding, you know, a little bit of pure water and a little bit of pure water and continuing to add a little bit of pure water. Eventually, that water, the salt in that water will become negligible because you keep adding the pure water. So that's the I think the hopeful part of karma, the hopeful part of understanding this natural law, that we can begin in this moment to choose skillfully. It's kind of interesting, the words for skillful and unskillful, or the qualities for skillful and unskillful. you know, the definitions, essentially, of what is skillful and what is unskillful are really, in effect, defined because of the way our minds work. That when we act out of greed, aversion, and delusion, we do tend to suffer. When we look at it, when we observe it, we see that this does not lead us to well-being. This does not lead the mind towards ease, towards peace, when we're acting out of trying to get what we want, get rid of what we don't want. There's a kind of a continual tension at play, and we're not in the state of ease and peace in the moment of acting. So the kind of definitions of skillful and unskillful come out of this natural law that the Buddha suggested, you know, greed, aversion, and delusion. And these are not, you know, avoid acting out of greed, aversion, and delusion. He didn't say it out of some arbitrary idea that, you know, what's good and what's bad, kind of a judgmental notion. It's much more practical that he saw, based on this natural law of karma, that those kind of actions lead us into suffering over and over again. And that if you want to find happiness, it's very practical. It's not about, you know, somebody judging us from the outside. It's about the way our, kind of the way our minds are put together as human beings. It's just the natural law of human experience. So the Buddha's teachings are really in line with this natural law. And I really appreciate the fact that he discovered it and articulated it so clearly. So I'm going to stop for a second. Any questions or comments? Yeah, Joel.
So maybe this is obvious and it's been discussed in some ways, but so if I build up a self-concept that, like, okay, I don't get angry, I don't get irritated much, and people reinforce that, then if something happens, even if it's a little thing, I may react in a different way than if I build up an attitude and I've developed an attitude like, you know, there's some good days, some bad days, some days that, you know, things will be, I'll be nice and serene, and other days I might get irritated, and it's just the way life is, and, you know, ultimately, I'm a peaceful person, but things will happen.
Absolutely. I mean, the notions that we construct in our mind, our beliefs, contribute to our how we respond. So if you have this concept of yourself as being a peaceful person, you know, I never get angry, and then you find, well, wait a minute, I guess I do. You know, I've seen this kind of dynamic around kind of creating an ideal sense of self and what I'm trying to live up to. And then when I discover that it's not true, it's like crash and burn. You know, there's a huge reactivity that can happen from that. So that, you know, I've seen myself kind of fluctuating between these wildly different notions of self, of being, you know, well, I'm a really good person, and, you know, I can do this really well, and I'm a good meditator, and I'm probably the best meditator here, and, you know, I'm going to change the world with my meditation. And then I discover I can hardly be mindful in the next, like, 10 minutes. I can discover I can barely be mindful, and then it's like, oh, I guess I'm not the best meditator here. Oh, that must mean I'm horrible. It must mean I'm not, you know, and crash and burn. And that that response, that reaction, comes because of the climate, essentially. And senses of self create a huge climate in the mind. So we don't necessarily get to pick and choose those climates, because they're created based on our conditions. But we can begin to notice those climates. And this, again, the Buddha points right to the present moment. that if we begin to see those climates right here in the present moment, we have the capacity and the possibility not to, well, to follow through on the ones that seem helpful and to not follow through on the ones that are not helpful. And that changes as we practice. What we understand to be helpful and what we understand to not be helpful undergoes a purification and a deepening as we practice. So initially, for instance, when I first started meditating, I did notice that I created this this identity of wanting to become a good meditator. I mean, I saw that. I saw, you know, it's like it was whenever I do something, I want to be good at it, you know. But I saw that was happening. And it actually seemed helpful because it motivated me. I continued to practice. It wasn't until I'm 2 or 3 years into practice that I began feeling the impact of that self as being unhelpful, where I began to really see that contrast of needing to be that good meditator, needing to have that be my reality and having it, you know, blown up in my face over and over again. At that point, I began to see, oh, maybe it's not such a helpful model anymore. So, you know, these senses of self, you know, it's kind of like that. It's we start where we are. We take the history, the karma of where we are, and begin to walk on the path. And the path, it kind of reveals itself as we go, and it reveals the places where we get stuck. And so, you know, I often have conversations with people that begin to recognize, like me, you know, well, there is a sense of self around this. You know, this sense of wanting to do good at this or be a good meditator, it seems to motivate me. And so, you know, what's wrong with that? But people sometimes say, well, I see that that's a self, so I can't have that self. I've got to get rid of that self, you know. And then they end up tying themselves in knots around, well, if I don't want to do something, why would I even do anything? So to begin to see where certain identities help us along the path, but then be prepared to recognize when they no longer serve us. You know, that moment, for me, it was the moment when I recognized that identity, holding to that identity, needing to be that good meditator, that's suffering. When I first started, it wasn't suffering. It actually helped me. It helped me to continue. And so suffering, I think, is a real guide for us in terms of, you know, just that very kind of identity. So, you know, you're saying, well, if I choose to have an identity of I'm somebody who has some good days and some bad days, well, sometimes we can pick up that kind of thing or try to incline towards that kind of thing, but we really do have to just acknowledge what's here now and not repress the fact that, well, yeah, I'd like to be the kind of person who thinks I have some good days and bad days, but really I think I'm the kind of person that never gets angry, and boy, does it hurt when I get angry. You know, so to be very honest with ourselves about what is the climate that we're waking up into. Does that speak to what you're saying?
Yeah, and I mean, not being a psychologist, but, you know, having a little background, I mean, I guess we look at, and it sounds like it's part of the karma of, you know, our past, maybe past circumstances or past ways of being or past, say, we were brought up with poor scripting. Well,
yes.
That's going to help build those models. If it's like, you know, woe is me, and that's my attitude coming, then when an action or something happens, I may have a different reaction than someone who comes up and says, okay, I'm going to have my good days and bad days, but I'm
exactly.
Essentially a good person.
Yes.
And they were brought up that way. Maybe they were scripted as a child, and, you know, that's where the psychology
exactly
comes in.
Yeah, and so that is kind of looking at, you know, what happens the arising of the action in one situation of the getting angry has a completely different impact because of a climate of where that person starts from. So yes, exactly. At the end of the session last week, somebody came up and said, suppose there were, you know, the very same action but different motivations. You know, what is there different karma because of that? And yes, that's exactly what the teaching of karma is saying, actually, like, for instance, let's see. Well, it's a slightly different action, but the same result. So you take an action and a spider dies. So just envisioning those two circumstances, two different circumstances for that. One time you taking an action of walking across a lawn. You don't know the spider is there. You step on it. The other one is that you are walking in your house and you see a spider and you consciously step on it because you don't want that spider to be there. Very different climate of the mind in that choice. So same consequence that the spider dies, but very different climate that is taking us into the next moment. And so this is where recognizing our intention in terms of why we act is important.
And the question was well answered. Thank you.
Oh, I wondered, for me, an example of that I had not, I still haven't really resolved, but it's like participating in meetings. So my family origin karma will come up and I'll blurt out. And it's like if those insertions of comments come from the need for attention, say, you know, the intention is unconsciously, you know, look at me, get attention, versus contributing to the better running of the meeting or the company or, you know, whatever the... So I can say exactly the same comment. Exactly the same comment. And most of the part, the suffering's on me, right? Because I'm not present to the experience. But I think energetically how it's experienced by others, even if it's helpful to the running of the company, if there's that urge to compete or whatever it is, then that affects our relationships and their experience of the meeting.
Yes.
And their ability to receive the ideas. And, you know,
absolutely.
So
you expressed it beautifully.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But that I've never been able, with that particular pattern, to achieve awareness in the moment sufficiently to just let it ride through or make different choices.
Keep looking. It is hard. It is hard to see into particularly deeply ingrained patterns. You said this one comes a lot from family of origin, so it's been practiced for a long time. But it is possible. And one of the ways to explore that, especially in daily life, and that's something that happens in daily life, is to kind of see if you can set your radar to that action. Say to yourself, I want to be present when I do that. And then be really easy on yourself when you forget. You know, you will forget. Because of that habit, that momentum is strong. So what you're doing essentially is adding in a slightly different momentum by making that resolution. So I want to try to remember that. And then what will happen is that you'll notice, maybe at the end of the day, oh, I did that, you know, 5 times during that meeting and didn't remember once. Rather than giving up in that moment and saying, well, obviously I can't get traction into this habit, in that moment recognize, I remembered it now. Let me just take in here and now what's happening right now. There may be a little bit of consequences of not having seen the habit in operation. So how does that feel? And in a light way, just, you know, take that in and then go on with your day. But, oh, actually, before you go on with your day, the other important thing to remember is make that commitment again. It's like, okay, I didn't remember this time. I'm going to try again. In the most compassionate way that you can bring that. So keep resolving. Keep, every time you remember that you haven't remembered, remind yourself, I'm just going to keep trying. I'm just going to keep trying. That intention, that resolve to keep trying will eventually gain some traction. But if you give up on that resolve, it won't. So it does have to be a continued kind of thing. I mean, resolve is a huge support for our practice. It's huge support. But we tend to relate to resolve and resolution like our culture, you know, like a New Year's resolution. We do it on New Year's Eve. We bear down on ourselves and say, I'm going to do this, and then we forget about it. And then say, oh, well, obviously that one didn't work. Resolves have to come. Resolves have to come over and over again. The way a resolve works is to recognize when you haven't done it and meet it again. And if you try that and actually just continue to say, okay, I didn't remember, I'm going to try again. I'm going to try again. Not with an aversion, not with a bearing down, but more just a compassionate heart. Of course you can't remember. History, momentum is heading you in that direction. And so to think that one time, one resolve is going to change that momentum, it's you know, the accumulation of that resolve over and over again that will eventually begin to change the direction. And it will give you that traction. It will. So what were you going to...
Well, when you were saying that, I mean, the loving kindness is really important all the way around.
Yes.
And I wondered if it's... because there can be the intention to be a better person or to conquer the habit, right?
Yes.
As a discipline goal in itself, which is a little driven. Whereas I wonder if it's more helpful to find the place of loving kindness for others in this, you know, to ease the suffering of others.
Yeah, explore what motivates your mind.
Yeah.
Explore where the motivation has the most juice for you. And rather than thinking about conquering the habit in order to get rid of it, I like to explore the possibility of understanding the habit, to understand it. The understanding actually will reveal many things. I mean, it will reveal some ways in which that habit has some benefits and serves you, and some ways in which it may not serve you. And so the investigation, the exploration, begins to reveal both the side of it that's helpful and the side of it that's not helpful. To have the idea that it's wholly unfortunate and wholly needs to be gotten rid of, that's just an idea. And so to investigate, you know, to be curious about it, well, what is it about? You know, what's going on here? To have it be more playful and curious rather than I'm investigating this in order to have it go away. Because that's, again, bringing in that quality of aversion. So if it can be a quality of curiosity and exploration and interest, if that can be the motivation, that again, it brings a different motivation to the action than paying attention to it in order to get rid of it. Yeah, thank you.
In your talk, I really liked the repeated use of the word intention, because it seems to, by itself, seems to negate the sense of the permanent self. Mm-hmm. You know, I could have, well, I've been thinking about a time in the last couple of days when I got very angry at something, someone. And it was sort of, first it's like, there I go again. That's me. I get angry.
Yes, yes.
But listening to the talk, I could have the intention. I will have the intention in the future to do differently, to understand that anger, if possible. I don't yet. And to see what see what that understanding brings about.
Exactly. And that part of the understanding that begins to come is, I think that the what our senses of self tend to congeal around are patterns that happen a lot, you know, patterns that have been conditioned a lot. And a way to look at this is anger is arising, anger is happening. There's conditions that have led to that. The intentions can change the condition. So, yeah, it doesn't... I think just actually reframing the way we recognize the anger rather than, oh, I'm angry again, to something like, anger is happening. Anger is like this. It takes the self out of it. And so that can be a tool in the exploration of that. And the curiosity in it, again, the curiosity does begin to reveal that it is just conditioned arising, and it does take the self out of it.
Anger happens.
Anger is happening.
And if you want to get rid of something, you must first allow it to flourish.
First, I wouldn't say flourish so much as...
Well, I like that word because it means bubbling up consciousness
yes,
in this case.
Yes, that's it. Yes, that it does mean. I mean, if we don't allow it to be present in consciousness, it's going to motivate us below the level of consciousness.
And let out the bag.
Exactly. So thank you all for your attention and your participation. And I have more to say about karma, so this will continue next week.